OWC Radio number 27, CES and Transwarp. Hey everyone, it is Tim Robertson. This is OWC Radio 2.0 number 27. I really wanted to have this episode out last week during CES, but it just didn't work out that way because a couple of things happened that made me want to push the show back a few days, and a few days turn into next week. Number one, I did do an interview during the CES show. Oh, what a great show CES is. If you've never been to CES, you should really try to get to Vegas at the beginning of January and go in 2016. It's unlike any other trade show in the world. There's so many different companies there. Everything from brand new refrigerators to new technology in cars to, hey, OWC. We were there. And during the show, we unveiled a few new products. Some of you may have seen the press releases go live. We talked about them on social media, Twitter and Facebook. Again, you got to be following us on Facebook and Twitter if you want to get all the latest news from OWC. And they were blogged about on our blog site, blog.maxsales.com. And because of one in particular, I got really excited about called Transwarp. I'll get to that in a minute. I wanted to push the show back so I can have a little bit of time to digest it and talk about it a little bit more intelligently here on OWC Radio. But I did do an interview while we were at CES with Serena Catania. She is a director. She was actually at our booth for a couple days doing a presentation. She will also be with us at NAB in a few months. So if you are a filmmaker and you're going to be at NAB, come to our booth during that show and see this demonstration from Serena. I think you're going to like the interview that I actually did with her. It's about a 15, 17 minute interview. We recorded it on the first floor of South Hall at CES. We actually had to get up and move during the interview because we were sitting in some chairs that wasn't part of our booth. It was a different, it really wasn't even a booth. I'm not quite sure what it was. It looked like they were putting tours together or something. So we sat there and the lady kind of gave me the, we need you to move. So during this interview, you actually hear us get up and move. That was the first in podcasting for me. And Serena is great. I think you'll really like hearing from her. And we've been promoting her appearance at CES. And again, she's going to be at NAB. So make sure you come and check that out. Transwarp is this new software that's coming very soon from OWC. And when I read it, it seemed like magic. And I didn't quite get it, to be honest. I thought, well, wait a minute, what about this and what about that? I had more questions than the press release answered. And since Transwarp is actually made by the same people who made SoftRaid, who I did a show with at the beginning of November of 2014 at the MacTech conference, Tim Standing and Mark was also there, and I had both of them on that episode of OWC Radio. I thought, you know what? I'm going to go directly to the source. I want to get Tim on OWC Radio, Timothy Standing, and Mark James is actually kind of on this episode. He's just in the background and doesn't talk. he was working. But I got Timothy Standing to come on this episode of OWC Radio and explain what Transwarp is, why it's a big deal, and why I think you guys are going to get excited about it. This is future technology. It's just amazing. It's combining the storage capability of a standard SSD with the speed and reliability of an SSD. I'm sorry, the storage of a standard hard drive, how much space you get, with the blazing fast speed and reliability of an SSD. How do you combine those two? Well, we know Apple did it with their solution, but there's some people that really don't like Apple's solution because if you lose your SSD, you lose all your data. So what's the solution that they came up with? How does it work? And I had some questions. So thankfully, Timothy Standing, like I said, is going to be on this episode First, we'll hear my interview with Serena, and then we'll talk to Timothy Standing for the second half of the show. And that's the bulk of the show because, again, this is brand new technology. I think that a lot of you are going to be very interested in this. And I wanted to get as many questions out there and answered as humanly possible for software that I haven't seen yet. I'm sure I'm going to have more questions once the software is released. And when that happens, we'll have Timothy Standing come back on and discuss it. And at the very end of this episode, some really cool and exciting news about the company SoftRaid and OWC. So listen all the way through so you can get to that cool announcement. In the meantime, I have finally recovered from my sojourn to Las Vegas and my time at CES. Like I said, CES is such a big show, but OWC had a nice, strong presence. And I got to tell you, some of the stuff that we were showing there was amazing. It was my first opportunity, to be honest with you, to see the Thunderbolt 2 dock. Now, I've seen the press releases. We've been talking about it on social media. I've talked about it right here on OWC, but I hadn't got my hands on one yet. I was amazed at how small it is. I was expecting it to be a much bigger box, to be honest. I don't know why. I've seen the pictures. I know how big a USB port is, so I can clearly see how big, or I should say how small, this device is. For all the different connectivity that you could do with the Thunderbolt 2 dock, I was just expecting something bigger. So when I actually got my hands on it, I was like, wow, you get all of that in this. Wow, it's amazing. So I finally got my hands on the Thunderbolt 2 dock. Of course, that features 5 USB 3 ports, Thunderbolt 2, FireWire 800, HDMI, Gigabit Ethernet, and audio in and out. It's great for video productions. It's, in fact, Video Production Magazine, Video Maker, recognized the Thunderbolt 2 by honoring it with an award. So that was pretty cool. It's a Best of CES Spotlight Award. And thank you very much, Video Maker Magazine. We really do appreciate it. These things are still in pre-order. Some people have received theirs already. Pre-orders are still shipping through the end of February. But very soon, if you haven't already pre-ordered, very soon you'll be able to go up to maxsales.com, order one, and have it in your possession that same week. That's what I'm going to do. I didn't pre-order, but I'm going to get my hands on one soon. I have a really, I don't want to say big need. I do have a big need. Let me take that back. I have a big need for this Thunderbolt 2 dock. Because number one, it's going to look great sitting right underneath my iMac. And number two, I've got a video camera that's still the tape, you know, the mini DV tapes, with a lot of footage that I still want to import into my computer. The problem is, the only machine that I have that has a compatible, well, I don't want to say compatible, that has a FireWire 400 dock is my daughter's MacBook. I don't want to do it on that. So I have to get the cable from FireWire 400 to 800, and then I could plug it into my iMac. But it's such a pain in the butt. I have to get behind my iMac. There's a bunch of cables back there. With the dock, the port's going to be right there underneath the iMac. So much easier. And I'm not going to transfer everything all at once, so I'm going to have to plug in and unplug this thing quite often over probably a month and a half's time. It's going to be a lot easier with that connection much more accessible right underneath the iMac in the front rather than having to reach around the back of a 27-inch iMac. Let's jump in now to my interview, my conversation with Serena, and then I'm going to go directly from that to my talk earlier this morning with Timothy Standing from SoftRaid talking about Transwarp. Really hope you enjoy this episode. I would really love if you guys could send some feedback. It's owcradio@maxsales.com. Again, owcradio@maxsales.com. You can send an email. You can comment right underneath the show notes. That's always at blog.maxsales.com. Or you can send us audio feedback. Really easy to do on your iPhone. Simply record a voice memo and email it to owcradio@maxsales.com, and we'll play your audio right here on the show. So if you have any questions about Transwarp after listening to my interview with Timothy, send that in. Send in your questions. I will post them for Timothy, and he can even come back on the show sooner rather than later and answer some of your questions, because brand new technology, it's almost like magic how it works, and I'm sure you guys are going to have some questions. I will be back next week with another fun episode. Until then, thanks for listening to this episode.
I am at the CES. I'm taking a break from the OWC booth. We're downstairs, and I'm doing an interview because I like doing interviews. I'm not going to say your name. I'm going to make you say it because we've said it so many times.
It's Serena Catania.
So we've been advertising on social media. I'm going to take off my glasses because I'm getting the Doppler effect thing going on. We've been talking about on social media the fact that you were going to come to the booth here at CES. You're also going to be at our booth at NAB. Talking about what it's like to be a filmmaker, the software, the procedures, the kind of things that you go through. And I do want to talk about that, but first I want to talk about you. How long have you been a filmmaker, and how did you get started in filmmaking?
I think I started carrying a still camera around when I was 3 years old. I couldn't get it out of my hands. And then when I got a little bit older, I started printing my own pictures, so I was living in the darkroom.
Is it the act of making the film that you like? Is it the finished product? Or is it, before you even start, the looking forward to what it could be, the possibilities? What's the big draw at this point in your life to you?
I think that's a great question because it's all of the above. I think most people that make films are storytellers. So the idea that you can look around a room, I mean, even where we're sitting right now, I could look around and I could find one person, like this security guard with the white hair walking behind me, and think, what's his backstory? Where does he come from? Who is he? What's interesting in his life? And that's what life is like for us.
Does his feet hurt right now?
Probably. I think I have blisters from yesterday.
So, as a storyteller, there's so many different ways to tell a story. There's feature films, there's television, there's documentaries. What's your favorite, and what are you concentrating on now in your life?
Well, I just actually delivered a script for a feature film. That's a faith-based drama, family drama.
That's Avengers, right?
Exactly, the cousin of. But creating something from an empty page is very similar to what you do when you go on location on a reality or documentary. You have an idea, you have this basic story, but then you fill it in from there. And then you can sit back months later or years later and you can see what you've created from that blank page or that blank vista. And that's a miracle. Every time it happens, it's just a miracle.
How often do you go back and look at your old work? Because we talked a little bit. I've done some filmmaking. It's really hard for me to go back and look at my old work because I'm just so hypercritical of it. I'm like, oh, why did I do that? And I got the lighting off on that, and I should have spent more time color correcting that. Are you hypercritical, or can you actually go back and enjoy the stuff that you did, flaws and all?
You have a few hours. I'll talk about everything I've done wrong. Everything. I remember shooting John Singleton at the Producers Guild offices for a tribute to him and doing the interview with him. And he's this very handsome, very dark-skinned man. And where did I put him? I put him in front of a brightly lit window.
No, you didn't.
I did. I was so excited to be interviewing him, I didn't even think. When right off to the right was this beautiful brick wall with a PGA logo on it. But I put him in front of the bright white window, and that to me is one of the worst mistakes I've ever made. And I look at that video, even though he loved it and he used it to teach with after he won the
he learned how to teach. This is what you don't do.
Exactly. He's just an example of something that just sucked.
Who is your you've met a lot of people. For the listeners, who do you think is the most interesting famous person that you met that after you met that person, you thought, I can't believe I've had that conversation with that person?
John Malkovich, I think.
Oh, God, I love John Malkovich.
Yeah, I worked on Les Miserables, which is a four-part miniseries, and all of the interviews that we did for the electronic press kits for that were done in French, Italian, German, and English. And I remember being really impressed with John because when the rest of the crew was off partying and having dinners at night, he would go into his hotel room every night and rehearse in French. He had a dialogue coach. He spoke impeccable French because the film was shot in English and then we redid the scenes in French. And his dedication was amazing. And he's just incredibly intelligent and actually very cultured. So it's fun to talk to.
What draws you back to this job? I mean, some people say, well, I just love my job and it's easy to get up in the morning. But it's more than that sometimes. What is the one thing that you're tired, you're overseas, you're sleep deprived, you're a little jet lagged? What gets you out of that bed, grabbing your gear, going out to wherever you're going to shoot? What is the one thing that really gets you going that you could kind of pass along to other filmmakers?
Do I hear a country music song going in the background now? Because I'm addicted to it. I love it. I love it, love it, love it. Even when I'm not filming, I like telling stories. When my children were little, we would get all of their friends in, and I would just make up stories. Or we would have playtime, and we would build tents, and we would climb in the tent, and we would tell these imaginary stories. And they loved it, and still to this day, now they're doing it for their children. I think what we do, it's entertainment, but it's also important in a way, because when you think that those stories are our legacy that we're handing down to next generations. Now, the kind of work that I like to do, I would like to find things that inspire people and motivate people. So how can you get tired of that? When you're working with somebody like Chianti Story, the Marine Corporal that I've been shooting for the last, off and on the last few months, went through incredible hardships. Lost a leg in Afghanistan. He's only 24 years old and he spent the last 4 years in a hospital. But he came from depression and PTSD and physical hindrances. And he's a motivating force in everyone's life now, because now he's training every day for the Paralympic track team, hoping to get a place on the track team. How can you not be happy doing something like that?
What was your very first paying gig that you got a check for and you thought, I'm actually getting paid to do what I love?
Aside from in the film industry, I think the first job that was related to that was I was doing commercials in Germany in French, English, and German, and doing voiceovers. And I worked at AFN in Stuttgart in Germany, and I loved that. I loved being with the DJs, and radio was amazing. We would leave these funny little messages for each other every night, and we created these characters. So when our shift was over, we would record things in our characters' names, you know, and radio's great. And to this day, I think it's one of my favorite things to do is radio.
I worry about radio are the days numbered for radios? Because of, I mean, we are almost, in some respects, with the podcast, it's kind of the opposite of radio. There is no corporate control, although there is on this podcast, obviously, it's OWC Radio. But as an industry, there's no oversight. You could have a podcast where, and I don't mean even just audio podcasts, because there's video podcasts as well. But do you think that stuff like podcasting and the internet, is this going to spell the doom for radio?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. People still drive to work.
They listen to podcasts on, I mean, most of the people that listen to this show listen to it in their car driving to work.
Pandora. And some of the digital radio stations. When you're traveling around the world, I know that I listen to digital radio that is streamed by the radio companies. Are we being called back?
We're being called back. So we're going to, we got to move out of this booth here. So we're just going to continue recording as we walk. This way, people.
Okay.
Thank you. So we got kicked out of the space. We were in somebody else's booth. They had chairs. So we're going to walk over this way and continue.
Tell them where we are.
So we are, where are we here? We're in the South Hall, the first floor. The crowds here at CES is just amazing. Have you been to CES before?
Yes, this is my fifth year, I think. My fifth year. There's 150,000 people that come here. It's larger than NAB.
Yeah, but it's more diverse, too. I mean, if you're selling a certain type of product, not everybody is here to see that type of product, whereas NAB, or even back in the Macworld days, you kind of knew what the audience was going to be. You don't know what the audience is going to be at a show like this.
I think it's all consumer. mostly aimed towards consumer, don't you think? I mean,
I don't know. I see a lot of stuff that's really aimed towards reselling to other businesses here too.
Aha, uh-huh. Like what?
Like up there, the company that was selling RAM. They don't sell RAM to customers. They sell it to other companies. So, I don't know. It's kind of all over the place, but do you think there's more or less or about the same amount of people that you've seen in the past here at CES?
You know, it doesn't look as crowded as it did last year. We won't know till the end of the week. But judging by the traffic this morning and the traffic in this hallway, it doesn't seem quite as crowded. Now, a lot of people may just be arriving because it's the first day that it's opening. So
you're speaking at our booth this week at CES. More importantly, you're going to be at the NAB booth, where we're going to kind of go all out with your presentation. We're really going to hype it. I know you'll be doing that on social media, too. If someone comes to NAB, because by the time they listen to this, CES will probably be over anyways. If they come to NAB and they want to hear you speak at our booth, what are the kind of things that you're talking about?
We're going to be talking workflow for documentary films. And I hope we get a lot of interaction with the audience. I'll be demoing things like how to log, how to manage your metadata, how to manage your files when you're on location. My specialty is field production for companies like National Geographic or for my documentary. So what do you do when you're working in the middle of nowhere and you need to know what to take and how to manage your, not just your equipment, but also what you're aiming for, which is great media. So what do you do with that in the hotel in the middle of the night, and how do you manage it? How do you name the files? What kind of copies do you need to make? And that kind of thing.
And they're going to get someone with firsthand experience. This isn't just somebody who wrote a how-to book. This is someone that not only has done it, is going to do it again.
I did a shoot 4 days ago in Gettysburg with a veteran who was in his 90s who had never before spoken about his experience at Tarawa, which was one of the bloodiest battles in history. And he talked about 5,000 people on the beach, and at the end, of the 3,000 that were Japanese, there were only 19 left. And I'm managing the media cards, and they crashed. The SD cards, not the SSD cards, but the SD cards. So what I also want to talk about at NAB is, what do you do in an emergency situation like that? Okay, the cards, the extra cards hadn't been formatted for the Blackmagic Pocket Camera, so I couldn't use them very quickly. So I had to really quick put the pocket camera away, bring over the secondary camera and start using that as my A camera, then in my head figure out how am I going to shoot this without two cameras now. Because I didn't want to miss that.
No, it's a moment. If you miss that moment, it's gone forever. He can't recreate that, and you're not going to get that on tape again.
Right. And then coming back that night, bringing the media in, I now have two different cameras with two different color spaces, two different lenses.
That sounds like fun.
It is. So we'll talk a little bit about that. What do you do in a situation where you've gone to plan B? How do you handle it? What do you do so that your stuff really looks beautiful and professional?
So you've been doing this long enough where you saw the transition from the big tapes to the little tapes to the no tapes to standard definition to high definition. 4K is coming up now. 8K is coming up now. Even though the technology is changing, and the storage obviously is where we come in at OWC, but even though the technology is changing kind of on a super rapid pace lately, does it really affect how you do your job, or do you still concentrate on the art of filmmaking itself and the tools are just tools?
It changes it in that I need a really firm foundation and a good support system for what I do. In the old days of film, where we had bigger crews and you had 400 people and everybody had a specific task, you could roll and you knew that you were covered. Now that the crews are smaller, sometimes I'm out in the field either by myself or shooting for a one-hour show with one other person for 3 weeks over 5,000 miles chasing lightning for National Geographic. So yeah, it does change the way I work because I have more hats to wear and I have to know more about all of those different jobs if I'm going to be successful at what I do. And where OWC comes in is that they've never failed me. They have never failed me. The cards that I use inside of the cinema cameras that I use with Blackmagic, I've never lost a frame. They've never gone down on me, and they've been used for hundreds of hours. So it gives me a sense of comfort that what happened to me with a little SD card from another manufacturer is not going to happen again because you can't get that stuff back.
Let's say that the people listening to this, they're not going to be at NAB. Where can they go to find out some of the stuff that you've done, what you're doing currently, or maybe following you on social media? Where should they go?
They can go to Twitter, to Cirina, C-I-R-I-N-A, or they could go to thecatania group.com, and that's the, C-A-T-A-N-I-A, group.com. Or some of the photography assignments are on Film Vault, F-I-L-M-V-A-U-L-T.biz.
We will have links to all of those and more at blog.maxsales.com. Look for show number 27 of OWC Radio. That way you don't have to try to write all this stuff down on the dust on your dashboard as you're driving down the highway. Thank you very much for being here today. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tim. Let's go walk the floor and see what they've got.
And as I was talking about earlier in the show, one of the things that came out during CES, which, again, I didn't have a chance to really look into it a whole lot because I was at CES, is a new piece of software coming out from OWC called Transwarp. Now, in the press release, it clearly says developed by the same team that brought SoftRaid to the Mac. Now, of course, I actually interviewed both the guys from SoftRaid, Mark and Tim, during the MacTech conference back in, geez, what was that, Tim?
It was November, beginning of November.
So there you go. I know the two guys, they didn't even mention, not a hint to me about this software coming out. I'm so disappointed. So I asked Tim to come on, Timothy Stanley, to come on this episode of OWC Radio to talk about it because, number one, the name is awesome. Of course, I'm thinking a Borg cube that's in Transwarp Drive. Isn't that where that's from? At least that's what it sounds like it.
My sister was the one in the family was a total Trekkie, and I was more into, you know, the Rolling Stones and listening to The Who. So
I was both.
You were both. So when the Transwarp name came up, when Larry said that was what he wanted to use, I was sitting there going, "Wow, where did this come from?" And then my wife, who is a total Trekkie and was a total Trekkie as a kid, said, "Oh yeah, I know exactly where that's from."
Yeah. It's an awesome name, Transwarp.
Yeah, it's good.
So what is Transwarp? Because the name conjures up something very fast, something very powerful. What's Transwarp?
You know, I've been looking at Fusion Drives, that, you know, Apple's Fusion Drives for the last couple of years, and it just doesn't make sense to me. You know,
it's ability to combine an SSD on the board with a hard drive, a standard hard drive.
So the idea is great. You know, you have a small SSD, you have a large hard drive, you put them together, you get something that allows you to store lots of data and is really fast. But Apple's implementation is it spreads your data over both devices. So if the SSD fails, you lose everything.
Right. So instead of losing just one drive, you lose both drives.
Yeah.
In essence.
And I've been doing RAID software I started consulting on the SoftRaid product in 98 when it was owned by another company. And then I took it over in 97 I started consulting. In 98, Mark James and I took it over. And I've been working on RAID since then. And the thing I've learned over all these years is, you know, fast is really cool. It's really, you know, sexy. But the bottom line is, if you've got something really fast that breaks, people are going to remember you as being totally unreliable.
Yeah.
I never want to do something which makes a volume less reliable. So the whole push for SoftRaid version 5 was to come up with solutions that allowed people to have really blazingly fast volumes that could still work if one of the drives failed. So we came up with RAID 4 and RAID 5 and RAID 1 plus 0. Those three RAID levels are really, you know, you can get upwards of a gigabyte a second on rotating disks now with 8 disks using SoftRaid version 5. And I think that's really cool. Not everyone wants to have 8 disk drives on their desktop.
Or they don't even need it a lot.
Or they don't need it, right. But they still want that killer performance. So so Fusion Drives offer that, but they have the same reliability as a RAID 0 volume, which means they're less reliable than a single disk drive. With a RAID 0 volume, your data is spread over more than one disk. If one disk fails, you lose everything. And the same with a Fusion drive. If your SSD goes, you're out of it. You're toast.
Or the opposite way, if the standard hard drive fails,
right,
the whole thing's shot.
So I looked at the whole situation and I said to myself, it's really cool what they're doing. I understand it's supposed to look like ZFS to some extent. ZFS was a very nerdy file system that was developed by Sun. It's used in quite a few data centers. It's, you know, if you've got relay racks with 96 disk drives in it, it makes a lot of sense.
Well, there was a lot of rumors going around back in the late 90s about Apple possibly adopting ZFS as their file system for the next generation of the Mac OS, which became Mac OS 10, but they didn't do it.
It was actually for Snow Leopard 10.6 that it was supposed to happen. And I think the licensing between Apple and Sun fell through for reasons that were completely non-technical. And ZFS has been sort of in the, you know, they're proponents of ZFS. From what I understand, the people who love it are using it in data center-like situations. For people doing things like video editing or photo editing, I think it's less than optimal because the performance is what I call non-deterministic, meaning if you sit down at your ZFS volume, you don't know whether you're going to have really good performance or whether ZFS is going to be doing something in the background, which is going to give you really crummy performance. So I've worked on storage for a long time. The bottom line I always find is the simpler the solution, the better.
Especially for the consumer.
For the consumer, even for the professional user, the simpler the better. If you look at all the data breaches recently, you know, a lot of them have to do with making a system more complex. If you look at storage on the Mac, the simpler file systems, the simpler storage solutions are the ones that stand the test of time, allow third parties to have recovery utilities that work, and allow users to really understand what's going on. So I'm in a real push to make things simpler, both in terms of when I write the code, I want a simple solution so that I understand it and I don't make mistakes, and simpler so that the end user understands the model and understands what's happening.
And they don't have to send support requests that Mark in the background that I know is working with you right now doesn't have to answer.
Right, exactly. They don't have to go searching on the web. So I'm pushing with SoftRate the product to make it simpler. I'm trying to figure out ways to make it simpler. Features that I don't think people are using, I'm going to take out. If I can make the metaphor easier, I'm going to make it easier, et cetera, et cetera. And I look at Fusion, and Fusion makes a lot of sense if you've got two devices in the same enclosure, like you've got a Mac Mini and it's got a SSD and a hard drive in it, or, you know, you've got, what other machines? I guess you can use it in iMac, but you can't use it on a Mac Pro. You can't really use it on a laptop because there's only room for one device. So, and it's sort of, you know, if you look at what Disk Utility does with Fusion, it sort of hides the whole thing from you and gives you this view like there's actually only one device in there. Well, that's not really working either, is it? Because the model on the screen is supposed to represent the hardware that you know is in the machine, but there's the disconnect there. So I look at this whole thing and I thought, it's a great idea. Fusion's a great idea. It's supposed to look like ZFS. That's great. It's wonderful. It's obviously designed by engineers, but someone like my mom is not going to want to use it because, you know, it's going to be set up for her. And then if something goes wrong, she is really going to be stuck.
So the big push over the last few years is SSDs. Everybody wants an SSD.
Yes.
But the problem there, of course, is conventional hard drives, spinning disks, are still cheaper and much higher volume. So up until this point, you can get for, let's say, a MacBook Pro or an iMac, you can put in a data doubler and an SSD, so you can have two separate drives in there. And up to this point, people would use one as storage and one for all their important stuff that they're using all the time, their OS, the iTunes, that sort of thing. But it was still two distinct drives, and they didn't really work together at all.
And then you're manually copying your current project from the slow drive to the fast drive, and then you copy it back, and you copied it onto the wrong place, or you copied the wrong one, or you lost 2 days worth of work because you copied the wrong direction.
So you came up with a more elegant solution, a faster solution simpler than what Fusion Drive is.
Yeah, so my feeling is, you know, what people are doing, if you look, you know, over the last 6 months, people buy bigger and bigger and bigger SSDs, and we actually support SoftRAID supports raiding SSDs. You know, you can raid four SSDs together and get it over a gigabyte a second in performance.
Wow.
But then you're talking $1,000,
yeah,
you know,
easily,
and you're less than a terabyte of storage. So why on earth, given the fact that most people have they access between 5 and 10 gigabytes per day, why is it that they're spending all this money to store 1,000 times more data on SSDs? So why don't they instead buy a small SSD, a 4 terabyte hard drive, and have software that just magically caches what's on the slow hard drive?
So can you explain in layman's terms, because I'm not the brightest person and it's a Monday morning,
yes,
how exactly it works?
So I'm going to go through caches first. The whole idea behind a cache is you're storing a small amount of stuff that you think you're going to use later on a really fast area or really fast storage media, because to go to other storage media would take too long. So there are caches in our processors, for instance, because going to the cache on the processor takes 1 or 2 clock cycles, and going to your actual memory can take 10, 20, 30, 100. So instead of every time you want to read something, if you're like in a loop and you're trying to do some calculation, you don't want to have to write the result out and wait for those 100 cycles for it to be written out, and then go through the loop and then again and read it and wait another 100 cycles. No, you want to have some area on the processor that will actually store it so that you can get at it really quickly. The same thing happens with the file systems. With HFS, the file system actually caches stuff. So if you're using something, a file that you're using a lot, you may not actually see it go out to the disk. That's great. The file system cache sits in memory. It allows you to read and write data really quickly, so you don't actually have to go to the hard drive. But every time you turn off your Mac, that file system cache is gone.
Right.
And it has to be reloaded and reset up. So the idea behind... hold on just a minute. Mark, can you turn off?
Thank you.
So the idea behind behind Transwarp is, let's do... something like a file system cache. It's actually lower level than that. But let's store it on an SSD so that when you turn off the power, the cache is still there and still valid. And the next time you start up, you don't have to reload the cache. It's actually already in cache. And you can just start reading it, and it'll come in really fast. So that's the basic idea. Make a cache, put it on an SSD, cache what's on a volume, and because it's on an SSD, it's what we call non-volatile, meaning it doesn't get erased when the power goes off. So if you boot up all the files that you read in the normal boot up sequence, loading your email, doing everything else, that all gets loaded into memory. Next time you boot up, it just comes straight off the SSD.
Now that includes the OS as well?
Yes, everything.
So you're getting the speed benefit of having a pure SSD without reading from a conventional hard drive.
Right.
But you still have all the storage. And if you start accessing something else more often, that's going to get loaded into cache. That's going to be saved to the SSD.
Right. So the secret to this is there's a history aspect of it. So it keeps track of where you're reading or where you've read on your volume. And after you've read it a couple times, it goes, oh, this guy's going to keep reading this. Because you don't want to cache things. Like if, say, you're copying a 4 gigabyte disk image to, you know, you're just making a duplicate of it for some reason. You don't want to really cache that original thing because you're probably not going to use it again. But if you access a file once and then you access it like less than an hour later, a second time, there's a good chance you're going to access it a third time. So that's when we start loading it in the cache. And it gets transferred. I don't want to say copied because it's not at a file level. It's actually underneath the file system. So things like the, unlike any file caching utilities or systems like the cache inside HFS, the file system on the Mac, it actually will cache the underlying data structures that HFS uses and make it really fast. So one of the really cool things you can do with this is you can imagine, okay, I've got my laptop, I take it around, you know, I go offsite maybe once a week or a week a month or something like that, and the rest of the time it's on my desktop and I plugged into my monitor or my keyboard. Well, you can have that situation. You can have an external SSD and plug it in, and every time it's plugged in, it'll cache whatever you're accessing, and then when you unplug it, your volume just works the way it used to work. Hmm. It's slower, et cetera, et cetera. So it gives you these huge options. The SSD becomes optional rather than required for the volume, and all sorts of configurations and use cases are available that don't work when you've got Fusion.
So you could literally unplug the SSD, boot up your Mac, and you're not going to know any difference.
Well, it's going to be slower.
It's going to be slower, but I mean, right, as far as your data.
You're going to know a lot of difference, let me tell you. In the experiments that I've done, you know, a boot up sequence on an iMac that would take 40 seconds, it takes about 25 seconds with the Transwarp technology turned on. So it's a sizable improvement.
Let me get a little geeky for you.
Yeah. I can out-geek you, I'm sure.
Oh, I know you can. I'm a Mac user. I sit down. I've got a completely empty hard drive. Where do I install my OS? Do I install it on the SSD or do I install it on the standard hard drive?
Okay, I'm going to start talking about features in Transwarp. Not all of them are going to be in the first release.
Okay.
The underlying architecture is to be as general as possible so that it can be used by the largest group of people. Where I want to go with it is to make it so that you can do something like the following: take an SSD, divide it in half, use half of it for startup volume, the second half for cache.
Gotcha.
In the first release, it will probably be the entire SSD is cache. In which case, as soon as you create it and start copying things to it, I will be starting with a brand new fresh SSD. I will be copying everything to both devices until it's full, until the SSD is full. So the first, if you've got 128 megabyte or 120 megabyte, I think is the OWC size, 120 megabyte SSD, the first 120 megabytes you copy.
Gigabyte.
Gigabyte, sorry.
Megabyte would be pretty small.
Yes, that was 20 years ago. The first 120 gigabytes you copy on will go into both the SSD and the hard drive. And then as you start using it, you know, and start copying on more stuff, the stuff that you haven't touched in a while, like the Chinese translation for all the strings in the Finder, for instance,
right,
that stuff will be bounced off the SSD, and that space will be used for something that, like your latest Photoshop files or your iMovie that you're working on for your kids or something like that. All that stuff that you're using currently will be in the background copied over onto the SSD. Now, keep in mind that I wrote SoftRAID, and I've been working on SoftRAID for Mac OS X since 2000. Mm-hmm. So there's 14 years there of really hard work just being down in the nitty-gritty.
15 now.
15, yeah, you're right. Being down the nitty-gritty, so I have tools and code in SoftRAID that I'm pulling out to use on Transwarp. One of the great examples is I have code that watches the user and how they're using their volume, and I can then I can make sure that the copying of data from the hard drive onto the SSD only happens when someone isn't actually using the
data. So you're
volume.
Using predictive.
Yeah, it's not quite predictive. It just watches your activity. And as soon as it sees literally a second or two of no activity, it starts copying. And then as soon as you do anything, it stops. So if you're, you know, playing music, you know, you're, say, iTunes or something, it's going to suck in 15 seconds of music, and then it's going to stop, and you're going to, so then Transwarp is going to say, hey, nothing's going on, it'll start doing the copy, and then as soon as you start sucking the next 15 seconds, it stops, and then it waits a couple of seconds.
It's going to get faster as time goes on.
Yeah, well, it's going to adapt to your use, and the more you use it, the faster it gets.
So how does the Mac know where to boot up? I start up my machine, the startup volume is obviously going to be the standard hard drive, not the SSD. How does the Mac know, oh, don't boot from this one, go ahead and boot from that one?
So
how does that work?
actually, what SoftRAID and what TransWarp both do is they create a disk drive object in the kernel. The kernel is the invisible program that's running that actually has root privileges. It's really highly secure, and it's the ultimate arbiter of what's going on.
And that's the first thing that launches when you start your computer.
Yeah, it's the first thing that launches, exactly. It actually runs all the other programs. It sets up memory, it sets up the file system. So the TransWarp driver takes these two physical devices and creates a virtual device that the kernel then uses. So the kernel has no idea whether when it sends a read, whether the read's going to the SSD or the disk drive. It just sends the TransWarp driver a read request, and the TransWarp driver figures out where that data is and sucks it off and sends it back. And obviously, the longer you use it, the more likely it is it's going to take it off the SSD. So there are two other things I want to mention here. The first is one frustration people have with Fusion is they have no idea what's going on. It's a black box. Right. It's like your iPhone. You have no idea what's going on inside your iPhone. I think that people actually want to, even if they don't want to change anything, they want to see that something's happening. Sure. They want to see what percentage of their reads are getting cached, or how much of their cache is in use. All these things are being exposed in the TransWarp user interface, so that if you want to see what your performance is, you think, oh, my SSD is actually not speeding me up any, then you can go and see, oh, 75% of my reads or 80% of my reads are coming from the SSD. This is how much faster it is because of that.
So this is going to be software that anybody can buy. They don't have to buy an OWC SSD or hard drive.
Yes.
This will work with any Mac.
Any Mac. So it's going to have the same restrictions as SoftRAID has. The current restrictions on SoftRAID are it requires a 64-bit processor. So that basically means I think any Mac that was shipped in from the middle of 2007 on, mm-hmm. 8 years, is pretty good.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
And it requires Mac OS 10.6 or 10.68 or later. So I didn't want to support the really old OSs, but there are still people with servers and people with older machines. You know, my middle daughter has a Mac from 2009. I'd want to support her. She can run Yosemite on it, no problem. So we cut the line as got to have a 64-bit processor and has to have Snow Leopard or later. But we support everything afterwards.
The larger the SSD, the better the performance is going to be because it will have more room to copy and cache, I should say. Yes. I got to stop saying copy. It'll have more room to cache files.
My prediction is you're going to see a diminishing return, and I wouldn't mind betting the diminishing return is about 60 gigabytes. That once you're above 60 gigabytes, it's not going to make a whole bunch of difference.
Because you've seen through studies that most people don't access more than that on a daily basis.
Well, they access, even on a really hard day of my coding and copying image files around, I'm looking at 5 or 10 gigabytes, and I bet I'm at the outer limit of what most people do. Now, people who are doing large video projects will probably be accessing more. People who are using large, high definition or high megapixel digital cameras might be using more, but the easy way to tell is you at the end of your day go into into an activity monitor, and you click on the disk tab, and you're gonna see in the disk tab the total gigabytes you've read and written during that day. So and that's a really good indication for how much you're actually using every day. I'm going to do that right now on my computer. I've been running for 2 hours now, and I have read 1.75 gigabytes. I've written out 700 megabytes.
Wow. So it's not a lot.
It's not a lot. That's not a lot. So let's talk about writes for a minute, because writes are sort of a special case. Fusion, what it does is, keep in mind, so Fusion sits there, and it's got part of your data on one disk and part of your data on the hard disk and part on the SSD. And it has this 4 gigabyte chunk that it uses for caching writes. If you write more than 4 gigabytes, it gets slow. And the reason it gets slow is because it fills up that 4 gigabyte free space on the SSD, the one it uses for housekeeping, and it actually has to start writing it out to disk. So Transwarp is a little different. Transwarp allows you to determine, to say, I want to use a write cache or I don't want to use a write cache. There's some user restrictions that happen as soon as you turn on the write cache. I'll go into those in a little bit. But if you turn on the write cache, you can write as much as you want to that SSD, to the Transwarp volume, and it will go all 100% at SSD speed. And what happens is, because it's actually cache and not a separate isolated part of your volume, we can throw out the oldest stuff, the stuff that you haven't used in a couple days. We'll throw it out of the cache and make room for the write. So you want to write a 20 gigabyte file onto your Transwarp volume, it'll go at SSD speed, the entire thing, as long as your SSD is larger than 20 gigabytes.
Here's a question for you. I've got an iMac sitting here. Mm-hmm. I've got the original drive in it, which I have to replace soon. But regardless, I'll replace it with a larger conventional hard drive.
Right.
But I'll still keep my computer the way it is, which is an SSD in the slot where the DVD drive used to be.
Mm-hmm.
Can I take advantage of Transwarp even though I'm already running on the SSD? Can I just plug another SSD into this? Will that help me at all? Will it do anything?
If you have your hard disk, your rotating disk as a separate volume, and mm-hmm. you want to accelerate that volume, you could do something like OWC just introduced this really killer USB thumb drive.
That's, the Envy.
I want one so badly.
Yeah, Envy Pro Mini. I can't speak today. Yes. I don't know why.
Plug it into the back of your iMac. Use that with Transwarp.
And it's not even really a thumb drive. I mean, it's the most generic. It's NAND flash memory.
Yeah, no, it's totally killer. And it doesn't have a SATA controller in it, so it doesn't have any bottleneck. It's just basically straight through to the flash RAM controller.
At USB 3 speeds.
At USB 3 speeds, right. And it is just, it's an unbelievably cool solution. So you could plug that into the back of your iMac, and if you've got USB 3, it should be blindingly fast. It'll be really great. You could also, if you're like me and actually still rent DVDs from Netflix, mm-hmm. you could put your DVD drive back in.
And just use this.
Just use that. Exactly. Wow.
It's amazing technology. Where did the idea originally come from? I mean, what was the genesis of it?
Of doing caches?
No, of doing this software in particular. I mean, Transwarp, there had to have been a moment where you went, this is what we should create. When did that happen?
My background, as I think I told you before in the other interview, is I started as a biochemist and I got hired by Mark James out of graduate school. And I, within a year, I was working on a file server that had a cache in it. And so I've already, this is, 20 years ago, I wrote a caching algorithm for it. A lot of the same things I worked out 20 years ago are exactly what I'm using this time.
So when someone buys a software, and I know pricing hasn't been announced yet, but when someone buys this software and installs it, how long is going to be the setup process going to be? How easy is it going to be used?
This comes back to another thing that's very different between Fusion and Transwarp. Fusion, if you look at what's actually on the disk, the first block of your volume is not necessarily going to be the first block of either the SSD or the rotating disk. It's going to be somewhere else, and the last block isn't going to be the end. So if something happens to your volume, it gets corrupted, and you need to use a third-party utility, it's much harder for like Disk Warrior or Drive Genius or any of the data recovery utilities to actually go, or TechTopro, to go and actually find your data, because the first block may be in the middle of the actual media on the disk.
Right.
With Transwarp, the volume is laid out exactly as if it wasn't a Transwarp volume, exactly as an HFS disk on the rotating disk. So that has two huge benefits. The first is if you want to actually do a recovery, you have to use any of these low-level tools because something happened, you lost power, brownout, whatever, you can actually go and do it. And the and those utilities will understand the transwarp volume just perfectly. The second thing is the conversion process to a transwarp volume and back from a transwarp volume is really quick, because all you're doing is telling the transwarp driver, hey, don't use the SSD anymore, we're done. Or, hey, take this volume and start using SSD with it. With disk utility, you can, or with the command line, you can actually go back and forth. But the process of going from a fusion drive to a regular drive can take hours. Because yeah. Think about it. You have to reorder all those blocks on the disk. So you're constantly reading stuff out, copying it back. Lord help you if you lose power anywhere in there. And it's also got to shrink the volume by the size of your SSD, and it's got to copy everything off the SSD onto the hard drive. It's a long and complicated process. With transwarp, all you really have to do is flush the right cache, change some bits, unmount the volume, remount it, you're done.
So what does the user see on their desktop? Do they see the SSD and the conventional hard drive?
No, they see one icon. We've finalized on the icon. It's going to look like something similar to the hard drive icon that Apple ships for their regular volumes. And superimposed on it is the icon that looks like an SSD. It's actually one icon with the two images on it. And it'll animate so that when the SSD isn't present, you'll see just the hard drive icon. So we want to give the user some feedback on the desktop as to whether their SSD is recognized or not, and that it has the famous Transwarp logo is right in the middle of it, so you know that it's part of Transwarp.
So I see something that someone emails me, and I download it to my desktop. Mm-hmm. Where is it downloading initially? Is it to the SSD?
It depends whether you have write caching turned on or not.
Okay.
If you have write caching turned on, it will... it goes straight to the SSD, and then like with SoftRAID, SoftRAID, when you're doing RAID 4 or RAID 5, it uses a write cache for speeding up the performance of small writes. So with SoftRAID, I flush things out as I'm very aggressive getting stuff out of cache. Every single data recovery we've done over the last 4 years that's involved the RAID 5 volume has always been because, and we're talking both hardware RAID until we started doing RAID 5, it was all hardware RAID that we were doing recovery. Almost all of them were due to power brownouts or loss of power. And what would happen is the user would not have it hooked up to a UPS. The RAID 5 hardware has a cache in it. As soon as the power goes out, they lose everything in the cache. Their volume's corrupted. So when I was writing the RAID 5 code, I made sure that nothing sits in cache for more than a couple seconds. And I'm going to be very aggressive about moving stuff out of the write cache onto the hard drive so that if someone loses power, they don't lose their volume. And there will be some user feedback for what point that cache has been flushed.
So some people, go ahead.
So because most people, when they're using, even if they're doing large Photoshop files, they're doing operations but they're still, they lean back. They go, is this the right thing? Is this not? No, it needs to be sharpened a little less. I need to do this. There's a lot of, just like programming, I say that the slowest thing about programming is my brain. The same thing is true of people doing creative work. The slowest part of it is actually them. They don't want to be waiting on their machine, but if you look at, say, any 10-minute segment, there's, 30 seconds, a minute of their computer doing stuff and 9 minutes of them looking at the screen, making judgment calls. And that creative process is really important. And they don't want to wait for their computer, but the computer actually has a lot of time in there to do things like flush stuff out to disk. So the Transwarp is very aggressive about getting stuff out of the write cache and getting it onto the rotating disk drive.
After the last time we spoke, the last time you were on OWC Radio, one of the things that was abundantly clear was that you don't do anything in a hurry. You make sure things work and work correctly.
Yes.
SoftRAID 5... Version 5, mm-hmm. 2 years in development, 9 months of testing. Does that mean we're not going to get Transwarp until 2017?
Well, that's an interesting question. So just as an example of my process, there's still code in SoftRAID, the shipping version of SoftRAID right now, that was, in fact, one major sort of infrastructure piece that was written in 1991. So I make a point of writing stuff only once. I, I, uh, I really do believe that the best way to develop a good product is to think about the problem, think about the problem, think about the problem. I tell my wife, I spend 3 days thinking about a problem. I spend a day writing code and half a day debugging. And that's sort of the way I want to do stuff. So Transwarp right now has, believe it or not, been in development for over a year and a half. We're just starting the test cycle. I would anticipate it would be out before the summer.
Awesome. I can't wait to get my hands on it. Before we let you go, I know some people are probably thinking, no, hold on a minute. SoftRaid was a company. If it's the team that's behind SoftRaid, but yet this is an OWC product, how does that work?
Larry O'Connor, who's the founder of OWC, and I have had a working business relationship since 2006. He was bundling SoftRaid 4. He's bundling SoftRaid. I think he bundled SoftRaid 3. I'm not certain about that. And he then got excited about bundling SoftRaid 5. And about a little bit more than a year ago, I got very interested in working with him. I realized that I'm a great engineer, but I'm not necessarily the best at marketing and sales. And I thought that rather than, keep getting frustrated by how I wasn't getting enough sales volume, I should partner with somebody. And Larry and I sort of had a meeting of the minds. I really respect him. I think he does a fabulous job. I think he ships some quality products and is always on the forefront of giving people incredible value for money and good support. And I just thought it was a partnership that was going to give me a whole bunch of what I wanted, which was the ability to make these really killer products and have thousands of people use them. And I think Larry saw it from his perspective as, hey, there's this great engineer. I can sell a whole bunch more product than he can. I have a great infrastructure. I can help give him feedback and help create the product in such a way that our users, i.e. OWC users, will benefit from it and not be frustrated by using it. And so I think it's really a great partnership. So the two of us have basically merged company. His company purchased the assets of SoftRaid. I'm now an employee of OWC Holdings and under his direction. And I am so excited. Everything that I've asked for from Larry, he said, yeah, great, go for it. So I have the autonomy I need to keep going. I have his resources. I'm listening to what he wants. I think it's going to be a really, really incredibly strong partnership. And I'm looking forward to taking the field by storm.
Welcome to the family, Tim.
Thank you.
And to Mark as well. I know he's there with you. So tell him I said, welcome to the OWC family.
Yeah, thank you.
I've only been with OWC as an employee for, 7-8 months now? So we're both pretty new here at OWC, relatively speaking. Like you said, it's a great company to work for. I think SoftRaid is going to bring just a ton to the company. I can't wait to see what you guys do next. SoftRaid 5 is an awesome piece of software. I cannot wait to play with Transwarp. It's going to blow my mind. I've got a machine that I don't have an SSD in yet. I was thinking about putting one in. At this point, I'm just going to wait because I'm going to use...
Don't bother.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to. I'm going to use an Envoy Pro Mini and Transwarp and warp speed ahead. Right. Thanks very much for being on this episode of OWC Radio to explain what sounds like very complicated software, but the way you described it, I completely get it now. I can't wait to play with it. And hopefully a lot of people are excited about Transwarp.
Yes. I am excited about it, and I can't wait to start using it on my own machine. So
we'll talk to you soon, Tim. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you so much.